Welcome to Career Tools. This week, how to analyse your job search, interviews but no offers. The questions this cast answers are, I'm getting interviews but no offers, what should I do? I'm coming in second in interviews, what should I do? Or how many interviews should I need to get an offer? So Sarah, there's a lot of places where your job search can get stuck. And we put out some guidance a while ago called the Job Search Tracking Sheet. And that allows you to track the jobs that you're applying for, the details about them. And it also allows you, because you can see how far through the process you've got, it allows you to see where you're getting stuck in the process if you are. So if you haven't listened to this to that cast, it's a good idea to listen to that one first. Then you can see what we're talking about. We have a spreadsheet, we have a bunch of data on it. And in this case, we're going to talk about what we do if that data says I'm getting interviews, like I've had 3, 4, 5, 6 interviews, but I don't have any offers. So what are we going to cover?
All right. The outline is you're no good at interviewing. Do rehearse your answers. Do video yourself. And do ask someone else to review the video.
It is harsh to say you're not good at interviewing, but if you are not getting offers from your interviews, then the problem is with your interviewing technique. There's a certain amount of, you know, other candidates are better than you, but that doesn't happen 10, 11, 12 times in a row. At some stage, you are the candidate who is the best candidate and you get the offer. And so our normal ratio is 2 to 1. So 2 interviews should result in 1 offer, which is a high ratio. A lot of people would say that was too high, but I've definitely seen it done by the best candidates. And it's a good stretch goal if you're not getting anywhere near that. And we told this to someone recently and they were horrified. They said, like, I can't possibly be doing that. Like, I've been for 6 interviews and I haven't had an offer. 2 to 1 seems ridiculous, but honestly, it's definitely possible.
If you're not getting close to that ratio, you've been to the 3, 4, 5, 6, then your interview technique is your problem. Right? The job of your network and your resume is to get you to that interview stage. And once you've got there, the offer, it's already within your reach.
Yeah.
You wouldn't even be invited to the interview if that hiring manager didn't think that you were capable of doing the job. Your being there would be a complete waste of time. So you wouldn't be there. There has to be sufficient evidence in your resume and or phone screen that you could already do the job. You're there for a reason.
We're not talking, like we just said, we're not talking about one interview. We're talking about 2 or 3 or more if you've been to that many interviews. If you just go to the first interview you've been to and you don't get an offer, that's fine. If you've gone to 4 and you haven't got an offer, then you might start to think that that's a problem. And between all of the people at Manager Tools, we've seen hundreds, maybe thousands of candidates. And there's really a difference between those who've worked on their interview skills and those who've not. And the best candidates aren't necessarily those with the best experience. You know, you can have someone with great experience who can't explain it, who can't say how they work, who can't give you an example of a time when they worked with someone who was difficult, who can't give you an example of a time when they've solved a problem. And everybody has solved a problem. Everybody's worked with somebody difficult in their career. Like, it's not like any of these questions are so esoteric that you wouldn't have done them. You know, the general behavioral questions, everybody's done them. It's just whether or not you've pulled out from your experience the times that you've done that and you're able to say it in the interview. So the candidates with the best interview skills are best able to share their experience and demonstrate how relevant it is to the job that you're interviewing them for. It's a bit like having a really great cake and then having really bad icing on the outside. If the candidate's a cake, right, and the cake is equally delicious, there's two candidates and 2 cakes, but one has really nice icing on and the other has really, like, looks like a 3-year-old did it icing on, then you're going to choose the nice one because you think the nice one's going to taste better. And that's what's happening with candidates. And it breaks my heart. Every time I see a candidate who looks like the cake that the 3-year-old made, it breaks my heart because I know that they have the skills, but there's a, game, in inverted commas here, there's something to play. And something to play is being good at the interview so that they choose your cake.
Right. The fact is, if you're not getting offers from your interviews, you are just bad at interviewing. You're just bad at it.
Yeah.
All right. Our first ever podcast, Solution to a Stalled Technical Career, it covered a similar problem. You can be a total technical genius, but until you're able to marry those skills with the people skills, which allow you to work in a team or manage others, your career is going to be stalled. In the same way, you can be a really great candidate for that new role, right? You have that great cake, but not able to get it because your interview skills, they're not up to scratch.
So what are you going to do to get better at interviewing? In this guidance, we're just going to talk about practicing your answers and videoing them so that you can see how you're doing. There's a whole range of other skills that come towards being a better interviewee, being a better candidate, and all of those are covered in the interview series, which you can take a look at to purchase on the Manager Tools website. But for now, we're just going to talk about rehearsing answers. So there's two parts to having great interview answers, and the first is knowing what the answer is, and the second is having rehearsed it until you can deliver it confidently.
Right. So the second part is going to be then, do rehearse your answers. We talk a lot in the interview series about rehearsing your answers, and we also often get pushback because people believe that rehearsed answers sound stilted and inauthentic. They sound rehearsed. That's not the case, though. The more thoroughly that you know the words to your answers, the more you're able to think about the communication that's going on around those answers. The words you're saying are only one part of that communication puzzle, right? The way we say them, our facial expressions, the body language, they all add to what we're saying. When you're just thinking about the words that you're saying, your body language is leaking messages from all other sources. So for example, you might be giving a relatively confident answer about how you tackled a difficult customer, but if you're wringing your hands and your shoulders are hunched, the hiring manager could make the assumption that you're less than confident than your words would suggest, or you're hiding something, right? If on the other hand, you've rehearsed those words until your brain, it doesn't need a lot of conscious input to say them out loud. It has the same power left over to concentrate on relaxing your hands and your shoulders and giving off that appearance of more confidence in your answer.
Think about for all of the Americans that do the Pledge of Allegiance. When you're saying the Pledge of Allegiance, you are not thinking about the words. It comes from somewhere in your brain and goes straight out your mouth. It doesn't go consciously at all. And we can attest to that by asking you, what's the last word of the Pledge of Allegiance? And nearly everybody has to say it all the way to the end, find out what the last word is, because you don't know it. And so when you're saying it, you can be thinking about all sorts of different things, and I bet you are. And the same with driving. You don't notice yourself doing the whole mirror signal maneuver thing when you are changing lanes because you've done it so often. You can have the radio on, you can have somebody talking to you at the same time, and you can be changing lanes because it's all muscle memory and it's all memory that's stored right in the back of your brain, and it just doesn't need conscious thought. Now, we don't want you to completely be unconsciously just babbling in the interview, but the more you've learnt the words, the more other things you can think about while you're saying the answer.
Compare that to the first time you drove something.
Yes.
It was not that easy. It was not that fluid. And you kind of sucked at it.
Yeah, and you couldn't have the radio on, and I couldn't have someone talk to me at the same time. It was just like, be quiet.
You were bad. So if you want to get good, you got to practice. Rehearse those answers multiple times daily. It's often said that getting a job is a job unto itself, and you can't rehearse those answers often enough. Rehearsing allows you to go off script a little bit when the question is slightly different and at the same time not lose your place. Come back to that same place in your thought process, and it allows you to sound confident while at the same time sounding enthusiastic. Rehearsal is essential to answering the questions.
So we haven't told you here what the questions might be, but there are a billion interview questions on the internet, and they're all the same to some extent. Every job needs people who will work well together, who manage details, who are able to communicate. You know, if you look for 100 interview questions and you just practice those, you would be ready for whatever the interviewer throws at you. And if they throw at you, you know, how many balls can you fit into a 747? You weren't going to be able to rehearse for that. You just have to do that off the top of your head. So we don't need to tell you necessarily which questions to rehearse. We might in some later guidance, but right now, if you just pick any from any internet site that's a reasonable site, you'll find questions to practice.
And some of them don't have right answers. How many balls go in a 747? We couldn't possibly help you with the right answer to that question because it's a terrible question and there isn't a right answer.
Exactly.
Sorry. Alrighty, the next piece. Do video yourself.
Yeah. I remember when we first put out the interview series, when I first heard it, and it was talking about videoing yourself, and I thought, oh, I don't know. Do I know someone with a camcorder that could sit there and video me? It was a hard thing to do. And now we've got video on our phones, and we just pop up the phone, and everybody's videoing themselves all the time anyway. So
all the time. There are no excuses. It's way too easy to do this. It's super easy. Just prop your phone up against something and ask yourself the question and start rehearsing. Just answer it. You don't think of the camera as anything other than the face of the interviewer. Now, you may need to do this 1, 3, 5 times before you feel that you forget the camera. Forgetting it is essential, though, because what we're looking for in this exercise is your body and vocal habits, the things that you're not aware of. And they're only going to come out when you're not thinking about them.
Yeah. So do this at least twice a day. We have some more specific instructions in the interview series, but do it twice a day, once in the morning, once in the evening, and then at least 6 to 8 hours afterwards. Then review what you've done. So what we don't want you to do is record yourself and then instantly look and see how you did. Because I can tell you, you'll look brilliant. If you do it 6 hours later, somehow you've separated yourself from that person who did the recording. There's something in your brain that ticks and says, okay, I can regard this as somebody else. And it allows you to see all the things that you don't know that you're doing. So try and put all your embarrassment aside and observe the video as impartially as possible. Try and think of it as not being you and look at what you're doing and listen to the actual words that you're saying. One of the things that I do is start sentences with so, and I literally don't hear myself say it. I just don't. And somebody will tell me, oh, Wendy, you just started the last 3 sentences with so. And I literally haven't heard it until you video yourself and then really concentrate on what words are coming out of my mouth. That's when you notice what actually comes out of your mouth. And the best thing about recording podcasts is our sound engineer, Paul Figiani, who takes out all of the things that I mess up and makes me sound good. If you heard us in real life, we say and ah and so a lot more than it sounds like we do on these podcasts. It's not a bad thing. You're not different. You're not a terrible person for doing this. Everybody does it. But you can stop yourself doing it. And until you know that you're doing it, you can't stop yourself doing it.
Exactly. We all have those verbal tics. There's also the facial expressions. You might have a strange way of frowning that's slightly disconcerting when you're concentrating. Or you might move your hands in a strange way. And often the things we use as conversation crutches are repetitive. So you don't need to worry about something big. You'll do the same thing over and over and over, and you're going to notice yourself doing it.
It's not like there's some big thing that you do, like you pull a monkey face in the middle of an answer. It's little things like I say so far too often that you'll notice. And so you're going to notice a bunch of little things. There's no big thing to notice usually.
Right. And don't try and cure your foibles only when you're rehearsing your interviews either. It's almost certain that you've got this tic whenever you talk, not just in this specific moment when you're recording yourself doing only job interviews. If you do repeat the word so a lot, you probably do this whenever you're talking to your friends or at work in a presentation. Don't worry, we've all got them. And working on getting rid of that crutch in general in your life will help your communication in all areas, not just in your interviews. So pointing it out to your friends, if you notice, you know what, I have a habit of saying so a lot. When I say that, would you mind pointing it out to me?
Your friends would be delighted to do so.
When I started presenting, because one of my verbal tics was the word really, I pointed it out to all of my friends. When you go on a diet, but you don't tell anybody you're going on a diet, you don't have to stick to it. So I said, I'm practicing not using the word really as much. Please point it out when I say it. So I had all the people around me pointing out when I would say my verbal tics, mm-hmm. so that they could all help me get better at doing it.
Exactly. That's what friends are for.
That's what friends are for.
And talking of friends, do ask someone else to review the video. So watching yourself, I think watching yourself comes second in the number of excruciating things you can do, but having someone watch and critique you is even worse. And yet it is at least as valuable as it is excruciating. Some of our tics are so ingrained, we don't even see them when we do them. And so when you're self-reporting, you don't even necessarily see what you're doing. The other thing about having someone else watch is it's amazing how much we think makes sense in our own heads that doesn't make sense to anyone else. I find that sometimes when I'm writing, I'll write something and somebody will read it and say, that makes no sense. And I'm like, of course it makes sense, because I've got some assumption or I've got some other picture in my head that this sentence fits in like a puzzle piece. And to them, it just looks like a puzzle piece with nothing to it. And your friends will be able to tell you, or a trusted friend will tell you, like, you answered that question, dude, but the middle bit made no sense.
Rehearsing an answer over and over that doesn't make sense is of no value to you.
Absolutely.
Right. It's not just the verbal and physical tics that someone else can find for you. They can also assess the quality of your answers if you choose the right person. The person that you choose has to have at least some experience in hiring people. Now, if you can find someone with hiring experience, they can still tell you if the answers make sense and are comprehensible. It just takes a practiced interviewer to pick out details like whether or not you're answering questions with specific answers or whether implying negative couched in a positive.
Anyone can tell you whether or not a sentence or a paragraph makes sense when you say it. Someone who's practiced at interviewing can read between the lines or can read something else into that sentence or that paragraph that maybe isn't as positive as you think it is. If you can't get at someone with interview experience, don't worry about it. Just ask the person, do I make sense when I answer this question? Don't try and get advice from someone about the quality of your interview answer if that person has never interviewed anyone. Somebody told me recently they wanted to talk. They'd been in the army, and he wanted to rehearse talking with civilians and not, you know, using the army jargon, but using words that were more common in the civilian population. And his mate said to him, well, that's all right, I'll help you practice. And the guy said, well, that's no good, is it? Because you're in the army too. You already know what the jargon means. What I need to do is go practice with a civilian. This is the same thing. If you're going to practice and think that you're getting advice about hiring, you've got to be getting advice from a hiring person. It's not just Uncle Joe. Uncle Joe's fine to listen to your question and tell you whether or not it made sense, but he's not going to give you the depth that someone who has been hiring will be able to give you. So getting a job is a job, they say, and it's true. And if you're not being successful at whatever point in the process, then it's time to put more work into fixing whatever problems that you might have. So if you're having a problem that you're submitting resumes and not getting callbacks, the problem is with your resume. If you're getting phone screens but you're not getting interviews, the problem is with your phone screens. If you're getting interviews but no offers, the problem is with your interviews. And so if it's your interview answers that are the problem, then do what we've just discussed. Make sure that you're rehearsing your answers. Make sure you're videoing them. Make sure you're getting input on them. And if you do the work, you will get the job. It will come round to you. It's slower than many people would like it to be. It's a drawn out and emotional process often for people, but there's work to do. And if you're doing the work, it's going to come. Thanks, Sarah.
Thanks, Wendy. Have a good night.
Hopefully that's helpful. We'll see you again next week.